It's the True Faith Podcast. I'm Norman Riley, joined on the line all the way from sunny Seaton Delaval by Alex Hurst to discuss yesterday's 2-0 home loss to Leicester City. To me, I wasn't there, so it looks like it was an utterly miserable day for all you fans who were. And I felt it was one of those where I felt throughout the days I was getting updates, a little like I did last season, whilst news of the Watford home defeat filtered through another match that I wasn't at. Maybe Alex, you can give me a bit of perspective, because there is a kind of a feeling of doom and gloom, and I'm an eternal optimist when it comes to Rafa's Newcastle United Football Club, but right now definitely feeling down. So mate, just tell me what was the day like? Give me a summary.
Well, the day started very well for me, because it was great to see True Faith back on sale in print across the city. Loads of people were sending me texts, sending us messages on social media saying how much they enjoyed it. Sending us pictures, stuff like that. So it's available for £2.50, Newcastle United's only print fanzine. It's available across the city from the back page shop, both there and in the Metro Centre. M&M News opposite Haymarket, Stay Free Records round the corner from there, next to Sergeant Pepper's Central as well at Central Station. So pick it up from there, or if you're interested in getting it delivered to your door in the United Kingdom, it is £25 for a 10-issue subscription, and you'll get it posted to you. And if you're outside of the UK, then you can get a digital subscription for just £15 for the year. You get it emailed to you every time the a new issue comes out. So thanks for all the great feedback. It's been made possible taking it back into print by the people who support us on Patreon for £5 a month. So it's led to a good thing. And let's hope we've got something better to talk about in future issues, because that was dire yesterday. I'm still a little bit hoarse, as you can probably hear, because you know what. I try and get behind the team just as you do when you're there, as much as possible, and it was a really, really hard day and a hard watch. The stadium was deserted at full time, and there was very little to shout about in what was a really below par performance for Newcastle United, and a very worrying one considering the teams we've faced at home, and Leicester are a good side, and I'm going to talk a little bit more about the mismatch later on. But we had one shot on target, which was John Joe from the halfway line, and even though it was a fantastic bit of skill, it never looked like it was going to go in. Really, really disappointing day, and there's no point getting too high after a win or too low after a loss. But I'm still, as I might have alluded to on last week's podcast or one of the Patreon podcasts I've said through the week, I'm really starting to worry that I can find three teams worse than us in this league as it is at the minute. I mean, Cardiff and Huddersfield look really poor, but Cardiff were like fighting relegation from the Championship two seasons ago, and Huddersfield were a season before that. What's our excuse?
I mean, you look at the stats and they're ridiculous. I mean, to be at home against Leicester, and you know what? Leicester have got quality. There's no two ways about it, but they're not a top side. And for them to have like 59% of the possession, they had twice as many shots as we did. They had five on target. We had one. They had nine corners. We had five. We committed 11 fouls to their five. So obviously that meant that indicates they did have a significant amount of more of the ball in dangerous positions. And I think for me, when I saw the lineup yesterday, it was one of those that, you know, your heart sinks again when you see almost like a kind of front three of like Atsu, Perez and Hosolu, and you just think like how we're gonna get goals today? How is it gonna happen? And obviously that's what it proved to be. I mean, what was it for you that made the day so like the performance and so bad?
It's a tough one, and I'll just pick you up there quickly on Leicester. We're going to get on to Mike Ashley later on, I presume. You look at Leicester's team. Okay, we went to Leicester, me and you, Norman. You were released from, like, you know, intense treatment at a hospital to make that kid because you weren't very well. And it was one of the best days. It was one of the best days ever. And you think, well, what was different to April and to us now? And obviously we were playing with a lot of confidence then after coming off some great results. We had Dwight Gayle in the team. Perez was playing very well. We had Shelby and Diomi. We had Kennedy. We had Richie. We had Yedlin. We had Lascelles. Dummett wasn't playing yesterday, nor was Lejeune. But I kind of thought myself thinking through this after the game last night, and I'm thinking about the wrong thing here. I shouldn't look at Newcastle United basically putting out a worse team because of injuries and also lack of improvement. Look at what Leicester did in the summer. James Maddison had a really good game yesterday. His set pieces were just fantastic. They were fucking brilliant. His corners and his delivery into the box. But he cost between 20 and 25 million pounds. And it's like Leicester have thrown James Maddison into that team that we beat. And the difference to their overall play was just absolutely massive. And like that's what happens when you put good footballers into a team. Look at our matchups yesterday, and look at what Leicester had to worry about. You had Mo Diame, who has done very well for Newcastle over the past 12 months. He was doing his best again yesterday. I don't doubt his effort, and he had a good header, which he probably should have done better with. But it was a good arriving header in the box. What did he cost? 3.5 million. He's up against
2.5.
Two and a half million. He's up against Ndidi, who cost 21 million. Was it Pereira in midfield as well for them? He cost 16 million. I think, did Leicester have a fullback against Astu yesterday who cost another 20 million against Cristianatu, who couldn't get in our side in the championship? And it's almost like this feeling, this realization, it's like, what we're doing? Like, you're saying, why was it so bad? I think it was that realization of like, we're going to go into things. I think we could have done things differently, and I think we can play much better than that. But would we have won the game? You know, really, would we have won that game? If Leicester played well, which they did, and they didn't really get out of third gear, could we have won that game? And I'm not so sure because, yeah, if we'd have taken the lead, if Hosslou doesn't fanny about on that chance when he kind of gets played through and a normal striker would shoot and score, and he kind of sees Matt Ritchie's run and thinks, oh, should I pass, should I shoot, should I pass, and then Harry Maguire makes the tackle. Even if we'd have taken the lead, we defended very well. We defended all right, I'll say, because we did get beat 2-0. But Leicester didn't create a chance in open play, really. In fact, it was quite... I text you about this, Norman. There's something quite funny happened. Rafa was getting a bit of a grilling off BBC Leicester or BBC East Midlands or whatever it's called, report after the match alongside Matthew Raisbeck. And the reporter goes, was that performance, one shot on target, really any good? Is that really acceptable? Like, what's your thoughts on that? And Rafa goes back to this reporter, well, how many chances did Leicester create from open play? and the report obviously has nothing to say back because the answer is zero. Back to your original question. Yeah, I suppose it was just a deflating day because I kind of think even if we'd raised our game there, Leicester are so far ahead of us now, adding the players they've added, and with the two lineups, even despite our injuries, I'm not sure we would have won the game. It would have been easier to watch because we were so toothless and created so little, but ultimately we're a long way from being able to compete with Leicester. If you look at the games last season, we're 1-1, we played them at home and lost 3-2, and that was the podcast when I was in Singapore at the time. Me and you talked on the phone and I just had a massive rant about our tactical inflexibility, the fact we're playing weak as piss midfield, Hayden and Marino against a decent side that were on a good run, but we were 100 times closer to them last December than we were yesterday, and that's to be expected when you make a £22 million profit in the transfer window. And Leicester, I mean, I know Leicester sold Mahrez, but Leicester added quality all over the park. I mean, if we had another, just say that we'd broken even in the transfer window and added a £20 million creative player like James Maddison, or put James Maddison in our side yesterday, you might see a different result. But ultimately, it's very difficult to remain optimistic at the moment. I don't know how you're feeling about this. You said, you know, you've just said that you are eternally optimistic about Rafa's Newcastle, but how are you feeling about it right now?
Really down and concerned. I mean, I've got another question to ask you, kind of related to where the kind of the entirety of the 90 minutes itself. But my opinion on the match was kind of almost like set in stone when I saw the lineup. I just thought we're not going to get anything. Like they're better. They're just better. And Rafa's tactical genius in getting with a 10th last season. Like the reality is that you can't be expected to pull like a rabbit out of the hat every single match. It's the paucity and the kind of lack of ability within the squad is going to catch up with us, and that seems to be what's happening at the moment. And unfortunately, we don't have like a spark in the side that can maybe kind of could do something in a match that just kind of gets everyone up and gets the crowd going and maybe sneaks with a result. That doesn't look like we don't seem to have that. We don't seem to have the quality to pull out of the shit that we seem to be in at the moment. And that's my biggest concern, is Like, we're on this really poor run, and I can't see a way out of it. You know, I can't see how, given that lineup that was out there yesterday, if the lineup's the same at home against Brighton, I can't see we're getting anything, because it's just a lineup that screams like negativity. I can't see we're creating anything. I cannot see it there. There doesn't seem to be any dynamism. There's a real confidence issue, and the confidence issue isn't going to improve by the time we play Brighton. I mean, we're playing Man U away. And that's what I was going to ask you. So my kind of mood pre-match on just seeing the lineup, what was it like in the stadium from kickoff? Was there like a big road kickoff? Was there a positive vibe going in the stadium? Or do you think a lot of people were just like, it's not going to happen?
Well, Mike Ashley was in the ground, so the atmosphere was very poor yesterday, but it was a kind of, you know, spine-tingling moment when the whole ground sang "Stand up if you hate Ashley." So everyone stood up, obviously. Even some people in the director's box, which made me laugh.
But the first goal, mate, when the first goal went in, do you think there was any kind of hope that would get someone out of the game? It was extinguished, wasn't it?
It was extinguished, and to be honest with you, we did all right before the first goal, and that's what referral cling to. We did all right. I mean, it's a really tough one, because you think, well, was it a bit unlucky? Should Yedden have raised his hands? I mean, it's one of those, I said to you, that when you look back on match today, it'll probably look like a pen because they do it in slow motion, and you think, oh, well, but live, it looked really harsh. I'm going from memory here, but there wasn't like a huge appeal apart from the players around it. Definitely not from the Leicester bench. But it was just very flat, and it was kind of an acceptance that we're going to pass the ball about a bit. I want to talk about improvements later, because I've got quite a few. It was, to answer your question, it was very flat. Just quickly, you know, you mentioned about Brighton. Since we came up in the Championship, Brighton have spent about £150 million on players.
Jesus.
In the kind of the three transfer windows that they've had.
What's their net spend, mate? What's their net spend, though?
According to transferleague.co.uk, their net spend is, let me do some maths, just 70, because a couple of undisclosed players that don't include, but that's only on incomings. All of their outgoings are there. So what you'd be looking at, a net spend last year of 70 million and a net spend this year of 54. So,
right, what's our net spend being, mate? Just out of interest.
Our net spend, if there's any young children listening, get them to cover their ears for this bit. Not that I'm going to swear, and we swear all the time, so young children probably shouldn't listen to this anyway. But we spent 10 million last season and brought in 22, so 12 million pounds in the 2 years.
Right, and how many points did we finish ahead of Brighton in the promotion season?
You're asking us a lot of questions here. I don't know the answers to the top of my head. Was it 1 point ahead of Brighton in the promotion?
It was 1 point, mate. It was one point. So Brighton they've spent 10 times as much as us, you could say, since going up, and we finished a point ahead of them in the Championship. So that's interesting, isn't it?
More than 10 times as much. way more.
My maths isn't very good, but that just tells you something. So this is another thing that actually, I tell you what, Ashley was at the game yesterday, and I genuinely hope that someone from Newcastle United Football Club listens to this podcast, because if you're your gaffer's a pile of shit. And I tell you what, mate, right, the thing that got me with Ashley, I was thinking about this yesterday, right, was his smarmy shit house commentary last season, at the end of the season, when he said, well, we finished 10th with these players, I think we need to start giving these players a bit more credit. It's like, mate, you don't realise we've finished 10th. The club have finished 10th in spite of you. It's because of Rafa and because of the collective effort of the players, yes. But why? What makes you think you know more than about the ability of these footballers than Rafa and the fans? It was really winding us up yesterday when I was thinking, can't do it. You know, you just can't do it in your mind.
I've got some advice.
Sorry, mate, go on.
I've got some advice here. I was at the fans forum on last Monday, which I can say nothing about because I don't want to jeopardise the process. There was supposed to be an article released on Tuesday about the key points that hasn't been released, so we're all keenly awaiting the minutes. The meeting was recorded by someone at the club on their phone. So, you know, there's definitive proof of what was said. I can't wait till the minutes are released personally. I'm really looking forward to it. I'll say no more than that. Yeah, if you're saying you have a problem with Mike Ashley releasing that statement, then you would not have liked to have been in this room on Monday. That's all I'll say.
I mean, there's no surprise. It's just utterly hideous. Like how Brighton Hove Albion can spend, as you say, more than 10 times as much as us, despite the fact we finished a point ahead of them only on the last day of the season with a last-minute equaliser for the team playing against Brighton, yet be expected to compete with a team like Brighton. It's absolutely ridiculous. Before I just gone off into a complete rantsville and gone totally incoherent, I'll just move on to another question. Is there anything you want to see Rafa do differently, mate, given the squad that we've got? Do you still think there's things he could do differently?
Yes, definitely. Though, like I said, I'll come on to it. First of all, I said through the week, we have a YouTube channel at True Faith Podcast, and we have done two things. We do a weekly show called Mag Talk, which is a less serious 10-minute chat than this deadly serious podcast. And we also did a small kind of film on the Palace away game last week. So if you're listening, you haven't been to an away game before, you live outside of the UK and have not been to a match, give it a listen on the YouTube channel. I'm going to post a link to it in this podcast. We kind of tried to capture the day in a short film for people who haven't watched Newcastle away before. So yeah, have a watch of that. But would I like to see Rafa do anything better? So yeah, on Mag Talk, which is the weekly YouTube show that we do, I said I'd like them to play Muto alongside Perez because Maguire and Morgan are big lumps who love heading the ball and really struggled against the pace of Josh King for Bournemouth the other week, and also really struggled against Dwight Gayle, and Harry Maguire should have been sent off that game. And you know, you saw Perez take advantage of lack of understanding for balls over the top, yet we played Hosolu again. Now Hosolu is a good header of the ball and he's a nice man. I have it on reasonable authority that Rafa was offered Hosolu as a player when we went down in the Championship, and he deemed them not good enough then. And I imagine he deems them not good enough now. Well, you'd hope so. But the persistence on playing him baffles me. He had an absolutely dreadful game yesterday. You know, he doesn't normally have great games for Newcastle, but at least he wins a lot on the air. He can hold the ball up. Yesterday, Maguire and the lad alongside him, whose name escapes me, who I've just said, but still, Morgan just completely dominated him. He couldn't hold the ball up. He couldn't pass the ball. He gave the ball away. He gave away fouls. It was kind of frustrating watching him give away fouls against the centre-backs without letting them know he was there, if that makes sense. There were just, like, nothing fouls. Mm-hmm. At least fucking elbow him in the head. I don't mean that like to injure them, but you know what I mean. You know, like Shear used to do, where the centre back might get a foul, but Christ, he's not going to go for the next header. As certainly, there was just none of that from Hosolu. He's too nice. He's too nice to play in the Premier League, and he doesn't have the ability. So I don't understand that one at all. And then when Muto came on, Shelvey looked a better player, and there was some fantastic balls played behind, and Muto did really well. And you know, on another day, we could have got maybe something by starting Muto. And even at Man United next week, I'd play Muto. I'd definitely start him. I just don't think Hosolu brings anything to the team. I understand why we signed him. I understand that the players the manager signed, you might not think they're good enough. And it really frustrates me. It was just BBC Newcastle. I was going home in a taxi last night after the match, and I heard a fan call up and said, why does Rafa sign these players and not play them? And, you know, I kind of don't know whether to laugh, cry, or just kind of shut myself into like a small room for 48 hours and just sleep when I hear stuff like that. Because what do you expect the manager to do? Do you expect them just to not sign any players? Do you expect them to just go, well, there aren't players good enough, so we'll just sign no one, and we'll just name like two substitutes, or bring lads who aren't good enough from the academy through? Because if you think like that, you're thinking like Mike Ashley, and you're fucked. You're part of the problem. You know, I don't blame Rafa Benitez for signing shit players, because he has no money to spend. We've just gone through the figures there. Compare Chris Hughton, who's a hero of ours. Compare him and his resources to Rafa Benitez, who's done a better job. You know, it's just nonsensical. You know, Fabian Schar didn't get a game yesterday, Norman. I thought Kieran Clark was dire. He gave the ball away. He messed up easy headers and clearances. He lost Harry fucking Maguire for the goal, which is just shit. So I personally would I like to see Shaw given a go, because I know Clark's got not good enough for this level. But Norman, do you know the key thing about these two players? Fabian Shaw cost £2 million less, almost half of what Kieran Clark cost. So when people say, why isn't he playing Shaw? Well, that's probably why, because he's probably not better than him. He might be, and I'd like to see him given a go. I thought he was liable for the penalty we gave away against Chelsea and cost us the game a little bit there. But, you know, Clark was really poor, and we're just playing with players. So, yeah, would I like to see Rafa Benitez pick different players? Do I think would have still won the game? Probably not. So it's like, you know, it's a hard question to answer. When near the end, Jonjo Shelvey had a free kick and in a second position. It was 2-0 down, like half the ground had gone. And Si just turned to me, Si was stood next to at the match. He went, Lascelles back post for this. And you know what happens? The ball was played to the back post for Lascelles. And as me and Si knew what was going to happen, obviously Leicester City knew what was going to happen, and he had three men on him and couldn't jump, and the ball just went out of play. Little things like that frustrate you as a fan, and you think, what the fuck's going on? Like, how are lads? But ultimately, if Newcastle had a new funky set-piece routine, or if Muto starts ahead of Hosselu, or Shaw played ahead of Kieran Clark, do I think would have won the game? No. So I think all of the players can do better. There was a togetherness, and I didn't see a lack of effort yesterday, but there was definitely a lack of belief. That's what happens when you lose lots of football matches and don't take the lead, because we haven't taken the lead this season. But ultimately, the most concerning thing for me is that I'm not sure it can get any better with this group.
Oh, that's as bleak as the weather outside my window right now, mate. Absolutely great and grim. I think, you know what, for me, this tie you mentioned there, like the lack of belief, and this ties into a kind of point that I think we brought up on numerous occasions last season, was that you look at the squad, and like, I think that we're lacking leaders in situations like this, like on pitch leaders. There isn't anyone who I think has got the kind of ability to just inspire and rally others. I think because they're quite young still, and especially in Premier League terms, in the sense of the kind of amount of games they've played. But also their personalities as well. I think that their heads go down. Like, I think that the kind of players whose heads are really affected by a few defeats. And at the minute, the one of the fears for me is that I cannot see anyone in that squad of players being able to just drag the rest of the players up with them. I just cannot see it. I don't know what you think at that point, mate.
Well, Kennedy has the ability, but he hasn't shown.
He has the ability, yeah. But I'm talking about somebody who's like a real kind of talismanic figure and voice on the pitch.
You'd think the Lascelles would be that player, but you have to try and, well, I try and think of the players and how they would feel. And, you know, me and you played football 11-a-side, Norman, didn't you, for a long time, and I've played football 11-a-side, and until my recent injury, played a lot of 5-a-side. And you know what you're coming up against, right? You know who you're playing against. And although all these players have a lot of self-belief because they're Premier League footballers, they know that if Leicester score first, they just do. I mean, if you're Matt Ritchie, you know that Hosselu is not going to link up with you. If you're Jose Perez, you know that the amount of forward passes you're going to receive in the final third is minimal. You know, if you're Martin Dubravka, you kind of know that once you concede the first goal, that's the game's over. And that, like, yeah, the players have to do better, and the players can't think like that. Me, a fan. But if you know, Norman, if me and you and everyone listening knows that as soon as we go 1-0 down, that's it, then the players definitely know. And it's just so hard now. Just to try and be a little bit more positive, you know, we still haven't played like a bread and butter fixture, which is a bottom 10 side at home. Leicester will be top 8 this year, I'm certain of it. I think they're a good team. I thought they were, you know, I thought some of the one touch passing in midfield and tight areas yesterday was embarrassing to watch, because it's not like our lads just can't replicate that. They're just not good enough. You look at the likes of Iheanacho and Maddison coming deep to pick the ball up and causing chaos, and which we just don't have the players to counter that. I thought Iheanacho is a really, really good player, actually. His touch is fantastic. His vision's good. He's almost, like, you know, I know he kind of plays up front alongside Vardy or just behind him, but he is almost like a number 10, like Maddison. And we defended really well against Vardy yesterday. You've got to give a lot of credit to particularly Lascelles, because Vardy hardly got a kick, and all the balls were good, all the runs were good, but Lascelles took care of him. So we've got him, we've boxed that off, but it was the rest of the team that we weren't able to cope with, their movement. And our lads just aren't good enough. Now, yeah, we'll play, you know, maybe you listen to this and you think, well, last season we didn't have this problem. And, well, last season we were poor in large parts, and then were very good when it mattered. Now, we haven't reached that when it matters point, but it's going to come pretty soon. And as you mentioned, when that Brighton game is absolutely massive. But I hear people saying, I wish, you know, we got a tweet today saying, I wish Rafa would have a go a bit more, and, you know, it would be better to watch. Well, Pardew used to have a go, and used to get beat 3-4-0 regularly at home, and it didn't feel any better. Norman, I don't know whether you agree or disagree, but I don't feel it felt any better.
I agree.
Just getting hammered. Now, Brighton's a different story because we need to win that game. We need to win yesterday, really. We need to win that game. We'll probably lose at Man United next week, and that's just because of who we're coming up against. I know we beat them last season. I'm going to the match, so it's not like I'm trying to be negative. I'm going to spend my time and money going to watch it, but I think we'll lose at Man United next week because it's Man United, even though they're in poor form. And by the time we play Brighton, we could be 4 or 6 points adrift already if the teams immediately above us win their games next week. So it's going to be a massive game, and we're going to have to attack them because the alternative is no good. I mean, there was a bit of a realisation yesterday, Norman, when we went 1-0 down to Leicester. If we were to go 1-0 down to Brighton, then, yeah, the shit would hit the fan.
No, I couldn't agree more with you, mate. I mean, I think obviously at the minute you've got a lot of voices on social media saying that, you know, Rafa should have done this, Rafa should do that. At the minute, I mean, as far as I'm concerned, he's working with a big, blunt, shitty, rusty tools that he might have at his disposal. For me, I'm still not at the point where I'm apportioning blame to Rafa for us losing 2-0 at home to Leicester City. I mean, to me, it's still down to Mike Ashley's long-term treatment of the club, and it's as simple as that. I don't know what your take is. I mean, do you hold Rafa responsible at all for this kind of start of the season, or do you just think it's an Ashley issue because the investment just hasn't been there, basically?
I absolutely blame Mike Ashley 100%, which we're going to come on to. But just on Rafa quickly, we have played well. I thought we played well against Chelsea. I thought we played well against Man City, and I thought we played very well against Spurs. So it's not like it's all been bad, but there's so little positivity, there's so little for fans to cling to. Like, no one is enjoying this season. Like, you're not enjoying it, I'm not enjoying it. If you're listening to it, you're not enjoying it. If you're Rafa, you're not enjoying it. If you're Matt Ritchie, you're not enjoying it. Like, no one can be enjoying this season. Like, the only person in the ground yesterday smiling was Mike Ashley. Like, the only person with a massive fucking grin on his face. Everyone else can see what's happening. But just quickly as well, in terms of Rafa, I mean, there was a Telegraph headline, fans turn on Rafa Benitez as Leicester win easily at Newcastle. Matt Ritchie, the substitution, was booed off. I've no idea why that substitution was booed. Ritchie was really poor and ineffective. Atsu didn't do much better, but he won a couple of corners, and you could have taken either of them off. And obviously, he's brought Jacob Murphy on his preferred right-hand side, which is probably why Ritchie went off. I just think it's pathetic, but look at the problems that we've got in taking a player who tries hard but ultimately added very little in an attacking sense, and I think he's a good player and he would start on my team every week, Matt Ritchie. But if you're going to boo a substitution at home, it's just, I can't see the merit of doing that. What kind of did frustrate me, what I would boo, was when these are the little things that annoy fans. When Perez got subbed off, Norman, you probably don't know this, but it was the slowest, most pathetic jog I've seen, and I don't know what the fuck he was playing at. Run off the pitch and just get off. You've had a poor game, for whatever reason, there's no need to take that long to get off. But I mean, that's neither here nor there. It's inconsequential, but the little things like that just piss you off, particularly when you get beat. To answer your original question, I really question the decision to let Dwight Gayle go for Solomon Rondon. I got a great stat sent to me earlier from Craig Thompson. Norman, here's one for you. No on loan striker has ever scored for Newcastle in the Premier League, and there've been a few. So that's promising.
Jesus.
That's promising. And Rondon played really well at Man City. He played well when he came on against Forest, but that's it. And we've already lost him. We didn't have him at the start of the season. We've lost him for injury. He hasn't been fit. Dwight Gayle is scoring for fun for West Brom. At least when Dwight Gayle played for us, Perez played better. The space created by Gayle's runs, Perez was able to drop into that space and do very well and receive the ball in the areas of the pitch. I've said it for a long time, I was a Perez, a waste of space outside the box, basically. or outside the final third. If he picks the ball up in midfield, he's no good. He takes too long. He takes too many touches. He gets dispossessed easily. He complains to the referee for a foul. That's just, he's always been like that, and he always will. But he's a good Premier League footballer when he receives the ball in and around the penalty area, and that's just not happening at the minute. I mean, I thought he could have had a penalty yesterday, maybe. I thought, when I saw it live, it's one of them where you're thinking, nah, we'll go nuts, obviously, shouting for a pen, but then, you know, me and Si were like, nah. I saw it on TV. Perez knocks the ball past Maguire, who has no intention of moving, and Maguire's arm comes across him, but I thought the referee was pathetic yesterday, though it had no bearing on the result, really. There was a point, I'm getting a bit off topic here, Norman, but there was a point where we were building up a little bit of momentum at 1-0, and we had a throw-in deep in their half towards the Gallagher. And we, for us, like a minor miracle happened, and we took a quick throw-in. The referee stopped the game so that a Leicester player could get back on his feet. And is that, like, what? That's not the game. That's just the referee being useless and biased towards the other team. But as I said, it had no bearing on the result. It's just an observation. But, yeah, Mike Ashley, yes, he's killed. I'm in the process of writing an article for a website who've asked me to do it, and it's on Mike Ashley, and it's time Newcastle United. And I think I've done like 4,000 words, like 2,000 too many, because there's just so much bullshit to fit in. It's hard to know what to filter out. I mean, I'd forgotten, Norman, just quick one on Mike Ashley. I'd forgotten that the day we got relegated against Villa, he released a statement saying that bringing Alan Shearer back to the football club was his greatest ever decision. Didn't speak to him ever again.
Yeah.
Didn't speak to him ever again.
I know.
It's just like, so
he's a coward, isn't he? Yeah. Like that's he's like almost like yesterday. You can say, oh well, he can't be cowardly because he went in, he faced the wrath of the fans, but he kind of laughed as like some sort of like sick, twisted, sadomasochistic Roman emperor. But when it comes to people like Keegan and Shearer and Rafa, like when he's not surrounded, you know, if it was a case of sitting in an office with him, he's an absolute coward. He wouldn't face up to them because he's a pathetic, spineless coward. Basically,
there was a brilliant Facebook post on the True Faith Facebook page by, I think, Mark Glendening, who put basically Mike Ashley is Britain's biggest benefits recipient because he's built a business empire on low-paid staff who require state support in terms of, you know, top-ups and
top-ups,
tax credits and stuff like that to build his business empire. I think that's a very good point made by Mark.
Yeah,
So everyone just keeps talking about this brilliant businessman. What we haven't seen a brilliant businessman, and for all the pain the relegations have caused, the most frustrating thing about Mike Ashley's Newcastle United is the two massive missed opportunities that we've seen. The first one being after we finished fifth and we bought a player that wasn't good enough to get in the first team and no one else, and Vernon Anita. And then this year when we haven't signed the players that were required to match the spending around us, Wolves and Fulham. Fortune spent, 100 million. Mm-hmm. Fulham spent.
Oh, yeah.
West Ham, 80 million net spend. Like, we're just Newcastle United and we're shit. And it's always going to be like this under Mike Ashley. It is not going to change.
Well, that takes me on, mate, actually. That takes me on to the next question. It's never going to change as long as Mike Ashley's here, and Mike Ashley's here for a long time in my eyes. Despite the obvious Kenyan rumours doing the rounds, my opinion, before you give your more eloquent one, is that I think it's absolute horseshit. I think the fact that Kenyan's stuck it out in the press already, I can't get my head around that. Apparently Ashley doesn't like things to be out in the open when he's doing business. I mean, again, you know, you see, that means nothing. If it comes out the mouth of Mike Ashley, it doesn't mean anything in any ways. The fact that there's a 400 million price tag in the club, it's overpriced at that much. And Kenyon putting the rumours into the mainstream press for me just smacks of someone. It smacks of opportunism as opposed to any substance. But maybe I'm being negative, mate. You let me know what you think.
Yeah, first of all, I just need to plug the event we've got. I mean, we've sold nearly 140 tickets, which is fantastic. And there's still more than a week, well over a week to go. So have a look at the link on our social media at the True Faith website and in the description of this podcast. It's a True Faith supporters forum, how to take the fight to Mike Ashley, because we need to start listening to the people who've done it before. David Connor's going to be there, who's followed Mike Ashley's career in business and in football for a long, long time. Sons of Struth from Rangers, who at the moment seem to be doing a better job of protesting Mike Ashley than the overall support of Newcastle United will be there. Spirit of Shankly, who took the fight to Liverpool owners, will be there. So come down, ask these people questions, find out what you want to know. Tickets available, £10 plus a booking fee. The booking fee goes to Eventbrite, the website, and all of the £10 goes to the food bank. So you're doing something nice for a good cause as well. Kenyon, right, yeah, I disagree slightly with you, but come to the same conclusion. So you say Kenyon has potentially released this to the media, but and that won't make Ashley happy. Normally, if you were going to leak this to the media, like one paper would have it. Like, you know, like the Mirror might have it, or the Times might have it. Peter Kenyon wants to buy Newcastle United. It was in every single newspaper. It was in the Express. And I just don't know. You've got to look at Keith Bishop for this one. It's almost to the day that the rumours about Amanda Staveley came out last season. And, you know, people are now talking about January. Will we not spend in January because of the takeover? That's laughable. We did not spend in January because of the takeover. We did not spend in the summer because of the you know what I mean? It's the club's own money, for fuck's sake. Like, what the fuck's a takeover got to do with it? So that's laughable. I don't believe any deal will be done until you hear about it, basically. Peter Kenyon doesn't have any money. Well, I'm sure he's far wealthier than me, than you or I, Norman, but he doesn't have 300 million quid, so it's going to be investors. And if it's gone public, if it is Peter Kenyon, I imagine it's so he hopes the phone rings and someone says, I've got the money. How much will I make back if I lend it to you? Etc. So, you know, Peter Kenyon has a little bit of a... I mean, he was at Man United, wasn't he? Then he was at Chelsea, despite proclaiming himself as a lifelong Manchester United supporter. And he was, you know, I think he was implicated in the topping up of Ashley Cole. You know, there aren't loads of really positive things there. Not that I care. Like, you know, some apologists for Mike Ashley say, well, who would you want to take over for Mike Ashley? Honest answer, could not give a fuck. Couldn't care. Don't care who takes it.
I'd rather that all of the kind of millions that Robert Mugabe's filtered away from Zimbabwe. I'd rather Mugabe took over. I'd rather Mugabe in charge than Ashley at the minute. That's my whole moral compass has gone out the fucking window, because I detest Mike Ashley that much. I'm prepared. So Robert, if you or Robert, any of Robert's people are listening, then you fancy investing in a football club in the northeast of England, now that you're retired from politics, please do get in touch with True Faith. We can set up some meetings of local journalists for you.
Yeah, it'd be a consortium, wouldn't it? True Faith would own 0.0001%. Though it'd be hilarious, though. I'm just you know, getting into fantasy land. It would be great if Ashley sold the club and accidentally accepted Zimbabwean dollars. Well, I'd say 100 million Zimbabwean dollars worth about 50 pence. But yeah, unlikely. I think we're getting a bit off topic, but yeah, Norman, you've been critical of Mike Ashley on the podcast before. Where does this wasted opportunity in this summer rank for you in all of his misdemeanors?
This is the worst. The fifth place finish, I think, on Minute Mag on Friday night, we alluded to it briefly. That fifth place finish for me, I use the word look, and I never meant look in the sense that, you know, some of the performances are fantastic, we have great players, but I meant look in the sense that it wasn't a kind of part of any strategy. There is no way that Mike Ashley planned to finish fifth that season. It was a complete anomaly. It would have come as a shock to him. And even though we finished fifth, he would never have had any intention of building on that, regardless. Even if we got in the Champions League, I don't even think he would have built on it. So we still had Pardew as manager, and I still think the model was there for all to see. This is the worst, because I think it's the treatment of, like, this manager we've got, world-class manager. Mike Ashley's never going to have a better manager at Newcastle United, as long as he's here. It's not going to happen, is it? Like, and it's not even like he's been our best manager by a little bit. It's been by an absolute gigantic... Obviously, you can put... If you take Keegan out of the equation, because Keegan was there for such a little amount of time, and his treatment was absolutely disgusting. This ranks as... I know I've thought of Keegan... Is this worse than how he treated Keegan? As an individual, no. As an opportunity, yes. He's absolutely and utterly blown a brilliant opportunity. And if he'd released like 50, 60 million, we could be talking about finishing eighth. You know what I mean? And that's like a massive progress. It's stability. It's more money for Ashley, and it's just better all round. But I mean, it's huge. And I can't even verbalise my disdain for this. this pathetic specimen?
Well, you've done a pretty good job of verbalising it, actually, I think. But, yeah, it's so grim at the minute. And, you know, protests continue, and that's a good thing because there's no... You know, Ashley's notoriously thin-skinned. It does get to him, so congratulations to everybody who's taken part of that. Keep it going. But, yeah, you know, I can't say too much more on him because it's just so obvious now where the team, back to the team, and this season where we go from here is a really tough one because, what is that, have we played 7 games? 2 points? We're going to have...
It's going to be 8 games, yeah, 2 points. I mean, games. It is going to be
it's
8 games,
games,
2 points.
2 points unless a miracle happens. And you look at the bottom three now, and I'm severely worried we'll have a Premier League season where the bottom three is just the bottom three and they're massively cut off. And I think Fulham are a poor side. I think they create a lot of chances, but they also concede a lot of chances. They're kind of the antithesis of us. I think Fulham could get sucked into it. And, you know, they had a really poor defeat yesterday, and Everton missed a pen as well.
What's the difference, though, mate? What's the difference between Fulham and us? What's going to be the difference in December and January?
Fulham will most likely invest in January.
Exactly.
On quality. And, you know, we brought in Dubravka, Kennedy and Slimani last season, very late in the window, of course. They were all gambles. You know, Dubravka turning out like he did. The club had no idea when they sanctioned that. Kennedy was a massive gamble. He'd had a terrible loan spell at Watford. They had no idea it would work out, and Slimani didn't work out. So even if we spend money in January, it won't be on the type of players. Like, it won't be a Jonjo Shelvey and Andros Townsend, for example, which is what we did last time. Didn't keep up, but they're very good players.
Or even a Moussa Sissoko and a Mathieu Debuchy, mate.
Yeah,
you know
exactly.
What I mean?
Perfectly put. There won't be players of that calibre. They will be Fabian Schurz and the like. I mean, it's basically, unless Rafa plays Mudo and this magical thing that I've got in my head, which probably won't work in terms of it being like when Gail played for us last season, that doesn't work. It's Rondon or bust, isn't it? And that's a scary position to be in when he's an on-loan striker. And he keeps getting injured. He's only played 90 minutes once this season, and that was for Venezuela. And then he's hardly kicked a ball for us since. Plenty to be down about.
Sorry, mate. I was going to say on those bleak note, on that bleak note, we could finish off with a nice. A nice little question on your madness of your mad decision of going to Old Trafford. I mean, genuinely, mate, is there any hope in terms of football? Is it just, I'm going to Manchester, it's a cracking city, I'm with me mates, I'm just going to enjoy that?
Yeah, well, me and the lads are actually going to see a band in Manchester the night before that I really like, so that's probably the main driving force behind it. While Rafa Benitez is at the club, I'll support Newcastle United. I've kind of made peace with the fact now, when we did the If Rafa Goes, Do We Go podcast between us at the start of the season, I was still, will I just stop going to away games? Will we stop just doing the podcast? Now I can't, after sitting in the room on Monday, I can't do it anymore. I couldn't go. If Ashley stays and Rafa goes, everything will stop. This podcast will stop. I'll stop going to the match. It'll not be part of my life anymore. So I may as well take the chance to support the team while I can. Enjoy, good. I can't drink at the minute, but so I'll be driving. But it'll still be a good day with some good people, you know, at the football, support Newcastle. And you know what? You never know. I went to Old Trafford in 2013, and I didn't think Newcastle, even we had a far superior team. That team in 2013, even if you put them in a team now, like 4 years, 5 years on. Like Remy.
I'll take Remy now, mate.
Ben Arfa, Sissoko, Gufran, Anita. I still think that team would beat us now. But that team, even at the time, and we won 1-0, and I had a ticket for that, and I'd watched England get hammered in Adelaide in the 12-13 Ashes, and I wasn't going to go because I'd been up all night, and I had to drive there and back, and my mate convinced me to go, and we won 1-0, so like anything's possible. That's football at the end of the day, and Norman, to be a little bit more positive after this sea of negativity. We win one game and everything can change. Like, you know, it was the same last season, particularly after the Leicester and Everton defeats. You know, a lot of people were like, we're down, we are getting relegated, and in the end we're nowhere near. So things can change, and we'll have a world-class manager, and we'll have some good players. and we might get a little bit of luck that we haven't been having. So, you know, it just takes one game and things can turn around, and all of a sudden we're sat here like we normally do, you and I, Norman, buzzing and full of positivity for the season ahead. But I'm struggling at the minute, and that Brighton game's just a bit, it's a little bit scary. It's a little bit like how big that game is. And, you know, after we play Man United, Norman, we don't play a top six side until Liverpool on Boxing Day. So it's kind of like, you know, the whole of half of October, the whole of November and December, pretty much, where we don't play sides like, you know, Manchester United, Chelsea, Liverpool, Arsenal. But Leicester aren't really anywhere close to them, and they looked a cut above us yesterday. So it's a tough one. It's a tough one for me. I don't know.
Yeah.
Do you give us any chance in Manchester?
Oh, no whatsoever. What I hope for is a kind of a spirited back to the wall performance, and you know, not a slaughtering. Like last season, I thought we played brilliant for 30 minutes. Me and you were there. We were fantastic. But then Man U's power and class obviously outed, and that was that. But I'd like, you know, even like a 2-1, even this is as horrific as it is to say this, even a 2-1 defeat where we've at least given them a game for a good part of the match, and you know, the players have kind of come off the pitch thinking, you know what, that's what we can do that. We've just got to kind of focus on that positive. That'll be great for me to take into the Brighton match, because as you say, it's a seismic match, isn't it? The next time we play a top six side, like you say, Liverpool in December, realistically, we want to be 4 or 5 points outside of the bottom three by the time that Liverpool match comes around. So we're going to have to start picking up results from Brighton onwards. But Man U away, I mean, don't get me wrong, they're not brilliant at the moment. They've got a lot of their own strife. But Man U, without a manager at the minute, and with the players they've got, they could probably still beat us at Old Trafford, I'd imagine. So, yeah. Not much hope from me, mate. But what you were saying prior to that, I'm on board with, and let's just see. We'll beat Brighton in a couple of weeks' time, and you know, things are starting to look better, and the clouds are starting to lift slightly.
Definitely. And I'm a little bit different to you. My hope for Manchester United is we just create some chances. Like, I'd rather see the performance that we saw at Man United last season and get beat 4-1 than when the performance we saw at Man City this season. I'd rather, because we had lots of chances at Man United last season, and could have gone 2-0 up and had some chances, and some poor goalkeeping and defending kind of cost us, whereas Man United did kind of play very well in the second half. But we walked away from that ground and we were like, well, that, you know, it's not nice getting beat 4-1. The away end was really loud, and kind of everyone appreciated the performance, because we were like, well, if we can create that many chances against a team like this, then we're okay. The big worry now is that it's not like last season where Dwight Gayle used to miss a lot of chances. This season we don't even create them to be missed. So I want to see us go to Man United. And I know it's Man United away, and I know what will probably happen, but if we could just have a bit of a go at them, and I'm not talking about opening up and playing expansive football, but play Muto, and because you know whoever, you know, I think Man United played McTominay at centre back yesterday, and Chris Smalling. If they play Hosolu between them, they're going to be like, this will be fine. This will be fine. What's he going to do? If they play Mutu, they're going to be like, well, who's this? They're going to be, who's going to follow the run? If Shelby plays a ball with the outside of his foot between the centre-back and the full-back, who follows? If it goes through the middle, who follows? Who drops and supports Perez? Give them some questions to answer, rather than just playing long balls to Hosolu, which he fails to win. And Hosolu, I think Hosolu played with Dwight Gayle last season. He had a reasonable game, but, you know, it's not working at the minute. It's just simply not working. So I'd like to see us at least try something different. Whether it happens or not, I don't know. I know everyone will be supporting the team regardless.
Absolutely, mate. I'm sure you'll have a brilliant day, whatever happens. And now, you know what, mate? I mean, I'm laughing at myself for saying this. Who knows? we'll leave it at there. We've managed to get 48 minutes out on utterly miserable performance. So, you know, kudos to you, mate. Plenty of good chatting there. Thanks to everyone who's listening to this. And we will be back, I guess. Well, Alex, do you want to give some Patreon patter, mate? What we got lined up on Patreon?
Absolutely loads. But, you know, I'm going to leave you with a quick clip from Mick Lowe's, who's got a live event coming up. So with Kevin Nolan, that sounds great. I think we're going to try and get ourselves along to that. That should be a really good night. And if you like the podcast, you like what we do, you know, it's £1.25 a week. even if you don't listen to the extra shows, it still keeps this show going. And there's a lot of extra shows. This week there'll be a podcast on Kevin Keegan's talk at the Sage, which you can hear. There's also a Man United full in-depth preview, as well as a very popular show we do called True Faith, Any Questions, where we literally answer any questions sent to us. It's always a good laugh. Unlike Newcastle United at the minute. But, you know, like you say, Norman, one goal, one result, one draw, one win, and everything can change.
Exactly. One vision, one dream, one, you know, one goal. There you go. Thanks for listening, everyone, and we will be back with you soon.
Let's talk about Kevin Nolan's return to St James's Park. Will take place on Friday the 19th of October, and it promises to be a fantastic evening. He's a great guy. He gave great service to this football club, albeit over a fairly short period of time, but I think at a time where you needed leaders, a time where you needed people to roll their sleeves up and fight for the cause and work for the cause, and lead a football club, as he subsequently did, of course, then Kevin Nolan just about was as good as there's been in black and white in recent years. He loves the city, he loves the area, he needs to feel the love by a separate set of magpies. He's been very harshly treated in the last couple of weeks or so, and a little bit like Rafa when Rafa was shown the door by Real Madrid and found a bit of inner peace and a bit of inner love on Tyneside. I think it's time for Kevin Nolan to feel that same warmth. Tickets are £15. There's a booking fee if you book online, but it promises to be a great evening. He has some fantastic stories. I'd be very surprised if Andy Carroll is in the audience that night, but if you can get yourself along, I'm sure Kevin Nolan would appreciate it, and I certainly would. I think it'll be a great night. Nine Bar, Friday the 19th of October.